This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to a special Monday edition of NHL This Week. A special extended three-hour edition of NHL This Week, of course, as we put a bow tie on what has been a very busy NHL trade deadline day. We want to hear from you. The best way to do that is via Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Send us your comments about what the Winnipeg Jets did, what some of the Jets Central Division and Western Conference rivals did. If we like what we see, we might even read it on air, of course. @IllegalCurve is how you can follow us on Twitter, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, pleased to be joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Gentlemen, it is a pleasure to see you on what has been a very busy NHL trade deadline day, especially for the Winnipeg Jets, the busiest of all the teams, with the Jets making five deals at the NHL level and another deal, a sixth one, at the minor league level.
Yeah, good evening, boys. It's good to be here. We have a lot to get to. And, you know, Drew, first off, I want to address what you said about us and how we're putting a bow tie on today's trade deadline coverage. So my question to you guys is, who rocked the better bow tie? Was it John Liu of TSN Montreal, or was it Bruce Garriock of the Ottawa Sun? Because both of them were rocking bow ties today.
It's always John Liu.
I think John Liu. Yeah. It's more of a John Liu sort of thing. I mean, I appreciate Bruce Garriock's attempt, but that's John Liu's sort of ballywick.
Imitation, the finest form of flattery.
Yeah, the most sincere form of flattery.
I think Liu started the bow tie game.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for John Liu on that one. I agree with you there. It's John Liu for the win.
I'd give
on
it
that
to
one.
John Liu
okay,
as well.
Good. It's unanimous then. So let's get
beat
into
it, Bruce.
Beat it, Bruce. That's right. Let's get into the nuts and bolts of what was an incredibly busy day for the Winnipeg Jets. And of course, we start with the deal that was consummated. It was sort of the deal that drove TSN's Trade Center coverage for a lot of the day, because there was sort of a big lull after the Jets consummated the acquisition of Kevin Hayes. And then, of course, it took until about 3 o'clock for things to really get picked up again, 2:45 with Mark Stone. So let's start with the acquisition of Kevin Hayes. It cost the Jets, as we know, Brendan Lemieux. It cost them this upcoming first-round pick, and it cost them a conditional fourth-round draft pick if the Jets win the Stanley Cup, which I think the Jets will be willing to pay if that comes to fruition. So Kevin Hayes, we've been talking about it for really a lot, probably the last 6 to 8 weeks. We spent all day Saturday talking about it in our trade deadline preview show. What do you think about the fit of Kevin Hayes up the middle for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah, I think it's a great fit, boys. And you're right, Drew. It's been probably 2 months, maybe 2.5 months, that we've been talking about Kevin Hayes as a possible trade target for the Winnipeg Jets and other teams. Nashville was another team that we were talking about that might be after Kevin Hayes. Mark Stone and Kevin Hayes were the two big trade targets for the Jets. And when you talk about, first off, what they gave up, you're talking about that first round pick, which is most likely going to be somewhere between 25th and 31st overall. So you're talking about a late first round pick. And when you're talking about Brendan Lemieux, you know, Drew, I really like Brendan Lemieux's game. Arguably, you know, he's playing the best hockey of his pro career. It's a young pro career, but he really was starting to come around, I think, on that fourth line alongside Mason Appleton and Andrew Kopp. And then obviously Nick Ehlers is back in the lineup. Then Brendan Lemieux was bumped out of the lineup. But when you're talking about what they gave up to acquire Kevin Hayes, the Jets, that is, of course, they don't give up a top prospect. And I think that's the key, right? Brendan Lemieux is a fantastic hockey player, but all due respect, he's a guy you can replace in the lineup, right? You can put someone else in the lineup to replace Brendan Lemieux, whether that's a guy like an Andrew Kopp, whether that's a Mason Appleton or whoever. So I thought that what the Jets gave up to acquire Kevin Hayes was bang on. I have no problem with what they gave up. So when you're talking about Kevin Hayes and how he fits into the lineup, Shawnee, I mean, he's obviously going to slot in on that second line, but I think his versatility is what was most attractive to Chevy. And he talked about it in his press conference. He talked about it, you know, about 20 minutes ago on the afternoon ride. Hayes can play on the power play. Mm-hmm. He can play on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that can either give you some goal scoring or he can set up plays. So he's a very talented hockey player. And also, which was mentioned on the afternoon ride with Chevy, he was actually drafted by the Hawks when Chevy was with the Blackhawks organization. This is a guy that didn't sign with the Blackhawks. He ended up signing with the Rangers, if you remember the sweepstakes 4 years ago. He's a very good hockey player. So he makes the Jets better up the middle, period. So in that sense, you got to love the trade.
Yeah, self-describe, playmaking center, a pass-first kind of guy, a guy that, from all the guests we've had on throughout the day and all the analysis we've heard, a guy that doesn't mind mucking it up in front of the net, going into the corners. To
huge body. 6'5".
6'5", 218. I mean, the guy is a giant.
He's a presence. And I mean, you're not going to miss him on the ice.
He joins a slew of players, also 6'5" on the Jets, so they're adding even more size to an already very large team. I mean, he can skate well. For a big guy, he can wheel pretty silky. I mean, we saw that amazing movie put on Jacob Trouba, that end-to-end rush in Winnipeg, and kind of captivated all the eyes.
About 2 weeks ago tomorrow when the Jets defeated the Rangers, and he definitely made an impression in that game, albeit in a losing effort for his then New York Rangers team.
But he kind of put his skill and speed on display for all the Winnipeg fans to see and kind of excite the fans a bit as to what player they could be getting, or the Jets could be getting. And I think it's a great move. I think it's, like you were talking about, Drew, I mean, you have that Christian Vesalainen still in the pipeline now. Eric Comrie remains. Sammy Niku remains. Tucker Pullman remains. I mean, these are some top prospects that you expect one, maybe two, to be parted with throughout the end of the day, and they're all still here.
Sure. Well, and you know, why that's so important, Shawnee, is because after the season's over, regardless of what happens with the Jets, whether they win the Stanley Cup or not, you don't know the future of players like Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers. So you're going to need some of those top prospects if you're going to make some moves, right? You mentioned the Sammy Nikus, the Christian Vesalainens, the Jack Roslovics. I was never in favor of moving a guy like Roslovic because I think his future is so bright. So when you're talking about a guy like Artemi Panarin, maybe you have to give up Jack Roslovic. But when you're talking about a guy like Brendan Lemieux, even though he's played some really good hockey and you know he's got nine goals on the year.
He's not a core member of the team's future.
He's replaceable. If you can get a guy like Kevin Hayes for your Stanley Cup run, that's the cost of doing business, right?
What about the Jets? I mean, we'll get to the defense acquisitions, but the Jets, you know, there was all the talk that they were in on a winger. You heard that they were in on Mark Stone. You heard that maybe Wayne Simmonds was their name. When you sort of take a step back now and we can all exhale at the end of the NHL trade deadline, are you okay with the Jets only, in quotes, only acquiring a centerman to bolster their forward group? Are you good with the forward group going forward as opposed to the Jets instead acquiring a winger instead of a centerman or a winger as well as a center?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, you talked about Mark Stone, Drew, there. And, you know, Mark Stone goes to Vegas. That was one of the teams we thought he might go to, right? Boston was in there and Nashville was possibly in there.
We heard.
Obviously, the Jets, as you mentioned. So I like what Chevy did as far as the forwards go. Kevin Hayes is obviously the big piece. Matt Hendricks is a 13th forward, right? Matt Hendricks is not going to be a guy that you depend on.
He might even be he's probably the 14th or the 15th forward,
right,
to be honest.
And Chevy talked about it here on the station, you know, as I mentioned, 20, 25 minutes ago now. Mm-hmm. This is a guy that you're bringing in for those intangibles. And I realize there are some people that don't necessarily like what he brings from an analytics point of view, but it's not always about analytics, right? It's possible that if the Jets go play four rounds in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's possible Hendricks only plays three or four games, right?
Yeah, you're not expecting Matt Hendricks to be in the lineup barring injury, certainly. I mean, you know, Par Lindholm, who they acquire from the Toronto Maple Leafs in exchange for Nick Patan.
Well, same thing.
Same thing, but he's probably even, you know, ahead maybe of Matt Hendricks on that sort of depth chart when it comes to the extra forwards. You're bringing in Matt Hendricks to make sure that your dressing room is right. Because, I mean, when the Jets acquired Matt Hendricks last year in the offseason and he left Edmonton, you heard about the impact that just leaving the Edmonton dressing room had, and obviously that organization's been in a tailspin now for the last two seasons. Matt Hendricks for the price of a 7th-round pick just to make sure that your room is going the way it's supposed to be going is well worth it. If it gives Paul Maurice a little bit more comfort, if it maybe takes some of the leadership responsibility off of the shoulders of Blake Wheeler, off of the shoulders of Mark Scheifele, and gets another voice in there who knows how to be a professional day in and day out, for a 7th-round pick, it's worth it. And I mean, I haven't, you know, probably deliberately, I haven't looked at Twitter to see if it blew up or not over the Hendricks acquisition.
I'm sure it did.
It probably did, but I think I'm better off not looking and not knowing. Again, if all it cost you was a 7th-round pick, that should tell you all the conversation you should really be having about that acquisition.
Yeah, the organization obviously liked what he brought to the team last year. I mean, it was an even older group last year. This year, I mean, minus the moves of Nick Patan now and Brandon Lemieux, but it was a younger team this year. So you bring in a guy like a Matt Hendricks, who had a very positive impact on a lot of players last year, in the dressing room, you saw it on the ice. So obviously, Chevy and the management group see some value in what this guy can bring to the dressing room alone, regardless of what it's on the ice or not. And they went on and what's like, I think we had a guest. I can't remember who it was today. We had so many guests. It was such a
it's all a blur the last 15 or so hours.
But I think the number was like, what, like 3% of seventh rounders end up panning out. So if you can, if you, you know, that's
I'd even be surprised if it was that high, to be perfectly
honest. So if you can get a presence in the room that can help kind of right the ship right now, because we've seen a little bit of stumbling as February, March.
SS Winnipeg Jets is taking on a little bit of water right now, and if the acquisition of Matt Hendricks can do something to alleviate that concern, then I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, Shawnee, you nailed it. It's all about the dressing room. It's all about his leadership qualities. We talked about it. Chevy talked about it. It's all about being that presence for some of the younger players. And whatever you want to say, I mean, that matters. So obviously the big acquisition is Kevin Hayes, but to give up a seventh-round pick for Matt Hendricks, if that ends up getting you a Stanley Cup, ultimately, or if it even gets you far in the playoffs, it's worth it.
If it wins you one game
in
the playoffs, it's worth it because it's a seventh-round pick. And like you just said, Sean, the odds of that seventh-round pick ultimately materializing into something is a shot in the dark. But if we all know about Matt Hendricks' limitations and everything else, so we're not saying that he is going to be the cure for the Winnipeg Jets, but if he helps in any manner to win a game or helps to win a round or just his presence there helps to make everybody feel a little bit better about
themselves.
Even
just to push the pace of practice. Everyone talked about how hard of a practice worker he was. Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the six trades, as a whole, right? And you're taking away maybe the Alex Broadhurst trade, but he's 25 years old. That was for future considerations. That was
the
last trade.
He's even still going to play for Cleveland. He's not even coming to play for the Moose.
Right. So if you take out that move, but if you look at, let's say, the five trades and the players that were acquired, mm-hmm. including Kevin Hayes, who's 26 years old, all of these players are veterans. Nathan Beaulieu is a veteran defenseman. Bogdan Kisilevich, even though he's only played one season, a partial season, is a veteran. He's, what, 28, 29 years old, right?
Yeah, played his career in the KHL.
So what does that do? That allows you to send down Mason Appleton. It allows you to send back Tucker Poolman.
To play some games
and help the Moose for their playoff push, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly, Chevy is adding veteran depth here. That's what you do with Nathan Beaulieu and you do with Bogdan Kisilevich. I don't think that the Josh Morrissey injury necessarily, was the reason why Chevy acquired these two defensemen. I think he was looking at left side depth on D before the Josh Morrissey situation.
No question. He may have only acquired one of those guys if Morrissey was perfectly healthy. Maybe he only gets Beaulieu and he doesn't get both of them. But again, for the cost of a sixth round pick and a seventh round pick, you're acquiring NHL talent.
Sammy Niku-Drew is the other player I wanted to mention. By acquiring Nathan Beaulieu and Kisilevich, now you can send down Sammy Niku, as opposed to Sammy Niku maybe being that seventh or eighth defenseman. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Niku has not been sent down yet. But the point is, you have the ability now for him to finish the season with the Moose.
And you want these guys playing with the Moose. You're playing those big minutes is what you're saying.
Well, as soon as Buff and Morrow come back, Sammy Niku won't be in the lineup.
Sure, because there's no spot for him, of course. And again, we don't know the status of Josh Morrissey. We all saw the injury. The Jets didn't have an update. It didn't look good. I mean, anybody who, the amateur doctors see it, you see him take the hit on the shoulder, you see him drop the stick and grab the shoulder, you're thinking separation, you're thinking dislocation, we don't know.
Collarbone, maybe.
Collarbone, it looked very, it looks reminiscent to Nikolai Ehlers' injury, and we know the time frame that was. Obviously, no details yet on that. That'll come out tomorrow when the Jets are really back in town and back, getting ready for that game against the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, and just quickly here, Drew, I don't want Sammy Niku Nation to get upset with me here, because I really like Sammy Niku. If you've listened to Legal Curve, for the last couple of years, I really like Sammy Niku, but when you're talking about the playoffs, specifically second round, Shawnee, you're going up against the Nashville Predators. What happens if you have an injury on that left side? Are you more comfortable putting in a guy like Nathan Beaulieu, who has a little bit of playoff experience? I think he's got 17 games with the Montreal Canadiens, but, it's a tough situation for Sammy Niku to go into a playoff series against the Nashville Predators and ask him to play 14, 15, 16 minutes a game.
You're just insulating your youth is what you're doing with a lot of these moves. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets' moves. We'll talk about the forward group going forward, how we see the defensive pairings lining up. Much more to come on the Jets' moves today on a special edition of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes after 6 p.m., welcome back to a special Monday edition of NHL This Week. We're recapping the NHL trade deadline. We'll be with you here until 9 p.m., so a little more than 2.5 hours left in our program on this Monday evening.
I don't know if I'm more into Sean's peanut butter sandwich or your little muffin banana combo here.
Yeah, I also have some delicious banana bread that my wife made. Some chocolate chips and
I'm
coconut.
I'm way more interested in what you have than this banana.
Yeah.
So you brought a banana and banana bread.
That's correct. I'm hungry, and it's only 6 o'clock, and I didn't foresee dinner arriving here anytime soon, so I'm going to go with what I had in my house. So anyways, welcome back to the program. This segment of the show, ironically enough, as I'm rotting my teeth, is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Shawnee, is there any jam in there, or is that strictly PB?
It was going to be a PB&J, but then I opened the J jar and found some mold.
Oh.
Oof.
So had to chuck it.
Just some PB.
Had just plain PB, and then my honey was congealed. I couldn't put any honey on there, so it's just... It's just sad.
By honey, you mean honey and not your girlfriend? Your girlfriend isn't congealed at the moment?
No, she's fine.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
Just the regular honey.
The regular honey, okay. The edible honey. Anyways, let's get back into talking about the Jets' forward lines now that they've acquired Kevin Hayes. And I hear everybody saying that Kevin Hayes is going to slot in the second line and play with, you know, Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers. Am I the only one who's not so certain about that? You know, that line went pretty well in Vegas. They didn't do much last night against the Arizona Coyotes. I'm not so certain that Kevin Hayes immediately takes Brian Little's spot there. I don't think it's as foregone a conclusion as everyone else is sort of making it out to be.
Well, there's one thing that's certain. Kevin Hayes is either going to be the second line center or the third line center. He's not going to be the fourth line center, and we know he's obviously not going to uproot Mark Scheifele as the number one center. Right. So really, you're talking about the second or third line.
Well, I mean, you know, and so I don't
it's
want
not
to talk
a big,
about...
It's not a big mystery, Drew, here. I mean... Whether or not you have Brian Little as your third line center, or it's possible he moves to the wing, that's what happened when Paul Stastny was acquired.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to happen either. But go on, keep talking.
No, but it's going to be second or third line,
right? But I mean, I don't really think it matters. I don't really think you need to number the lines. I mean, because calling Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp as the Jets' fourth line.
Well, the Scheifele line is your number one line.
No question about that. So, I mean, you can say there's, you know, three scoring lines and one possession-driving line in Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp.
Sure, and I think it really depends what line Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor are on, more so if you're going to call it a second or third line. Patrick Laine is not going to be on your quote-unquote third line. But the point is, I think we're more worried here, Drew, about who Kevin Hayes is going to play between.
That's what I mean.
Who cares if it's 2A, 2B, 3, whatever you want to call it, because I do think he could be your quote-unquote second-line center, but then you have an issue with where does Brian Little fit in, because you like that TLC line, right? As you mentioned, Drew, it is such a possession driver, right? So I imagine Kevin Hayes will line up with Patrick Laine, and Nikolaj Ehlers has been very successful with Patrick Laine on the opposite wing, but then the question becomes, are you not going to continue the success that Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers have had as of late? You mentioned in Arizona it wasn't as successful, but the game before that, big win in Vegas.
Well, they were dominant in the first, you know,
the first 90 seconds, yeah. And they were good throughout the game. So I think Paul Maurice is probably right now going through these different line combinations in your head, but I think you don't, again, I realize that a lot of fans like to get into the lineups and the line combinations and say, you know, Kevin Hayes is now going to slot in as the second line center, which he very well might. But I think what you have to do is look big picture, and Kevin Hayes gives you more depth, and it gives Paul Maurice another option up the middle. So whether or not Brian Little eventually moves to the wing, this just makes the Jets a better team. That's what you should be focused on,
in my opinion. That's my point. Going back to Saturday when we were going through the possibilities, and at that time it was all Mark Stone, Mark Stone, Mark Stone. You know, I said, take a step back, look at the Jets roster as it's constructed, and tell me that what you really need is a winger, even one as good as Mark Stone is, versus someone to sort of shore up that center ice position. And I think the Jets roster right now is more complete having acquired a very good center than it would be had they acquired a very good winger, because there'd still be that hole. You'd still have that, you know, what I'm going to call the fourth line. You still have Jack Roslovic centering a line, which the team did not seem to be very comfortable with, as we saw by the limited minutes he played in the last couple games when he was centering a line.
Regardless of where Kevin Hayes slots into the lineup and who he's playing with and if he's two or three or four, I think the biggest impact it's going to have, it's going to reduce some minutes off that top line and the amount of heavy lifting that the Wheeler, Scheifele, and whoever line has to do, because we've seen that the play of that top line kind of diminish over the last, I'd say, few weeks. And it's they've been working hard. They've been chomping some major minutes over the past couple months. And I think that alleviating some of the stress of time on ice and the quality of time, I mean, like all we've talked about is how responsible of a two-way player Kevin Hayes is. He kills penalties, so perhaps Scheifele Wheeler won't have to kill as many penalties. I just feel the impact he'll have lightening the load on that top line is going to be huge down the home stretch.
Yeah, and guys, even though Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers played really well with Brian Little the last couple of games, and Line A's been really successful up on that top line, there is no certainty or permanence to any of these lines at this point. Aside from the TLC line, as you pointed out on Saturday, I agree, that TLC line should be written in stone.
If you're changing that line, you're overthinking, you're overcomplicating things. That line is, has been, for the last almost 2 years, when they're together, they've been that dominant.
For Barry Trotz and before him, Doug Wade and Jack Capuano, if you think about it, it reminds me a lot of Cal Clutterbuck, Casey Cizikas, and Matt Martin, right? Those three players always seem to play together. Obviously, Martin went to Toronto for a bit. But the point is, Sean, to your point, when you're talking about, you know, reducing some of the responsibilities and the ice time of Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, I think another question that has to be asked, and obviously we don't know the answer to this yet, is what now happens to that fourth line, right? Because Mason Appleton has been sent down to the Moose. Brendan Lemieux has been traded. Those were two pieces of your fourth line for the last, what, month and a half? So is your fourth line going to be Matthew Perreault, Jack Roslovic, and Brian Little?
Well, I
don't know about that.
You don't know about that in what sense? You don't think that?
Well, I have no idea if that's what your fourth line is going to be.
I think it's either Brian Little or it's Kevin Hayes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that line assembled in the playoffs last year? Wasn't that the third/fourth line of the Jet, the Roslovic Little Perreault line?
Well, we saw Brian Little on the wing a lot also in the playoffs last year, and that a lot of people thought that had to do with an injury concern where he might not have been as adept at taking face-offs. Now, I don't see them moving Brian Little to the wing, because how does that solve your problem when you go up the middle? Again, you're now still short a centerman.
Well, Jack Roslovic has not spent a lot of time at center this year for the Jets.
I have no belief.
So it would have to be Roslovic on the wing of one of those two lines, the third and fourth line, because obviously he hasn't been on the second line. So you're talking about, right now, these are your options. Obviously, you have Par Lindholm, so he's an option, and you have Matt Hendricks. But I think we all agree, guys, that Par Lindholm and Matt Hendricks are your 13th and 14th forwards.
No question.
So there is a chance that you have Little Perreault and Roslovic on your fourth line, which you have two first-round picks there. It's pretty incredible that that would be your fourth line. But again, is that really your fourth line? To me, that's probably your third line, and then the TLC line is your fourth line. Based on skill.
Yeah, basically, sure. And TLC, I think they might. But that being said, I think TLC probably is the second line over the boards on every given night, because you've seen Paul Maurice start with Scheifele and with Wheeler and with Line, and then the next line he throws out there is TLC to get them into the flow of the game, to get them just the dominant force that they've been. I mean, really, it's that simple. Now, whether or not Kevin Hayes ends up going between, you know, Line A and Ehlers and Connor and Little with Perreault, and maybe the veteran presence of Little and Perreault, and we know that Little has played with Roslovic for a lot this year, and maybe that helps drive the possession of that line. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces here, but I think when you go look at the Winnipeg Jets forward group, top to bottom, it's probably the best forward group in the Western Conference right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that Winnipeg has surpassed Nashville. And even though we're going to get into this later when we talk about the Central Division, because the Central Division was obviously also active.
Sure.
You had Nashville, Colorado, and even, you know, Minnesota more so earlier. They didn't move Eric Staal or Jason Zucker.
They signed them to a two-year contract extension.
But when you're talking about, you know, some of the moves they made with Nito Niederreiter and...
Sure. I mean, the Jets...
And Charlie
Coyle. Jets 1 through 12 don't have a... I mean, the biggest question mark of the Jets forward group, I would say, is Jack Roslovic. And you're going to be playing him in a very protected minutes with two other veteran players, be it Perreault and Little, be it Perreault and Hayes, be it whomever. You're going to be playing Jack Roslovic in good opportunities with a couple other skilled players. So the Jets forward group, 1 through 12 right now, is as impressive as any in the entire NHL.
I would say that Tampa Bay is the only team in the NHL that has better forward depth than the Jets.
I think there's only one team. Yeah,
I think it's undeniable. I mean, Tampa Bay obviously is
Tampa Bay's the best
running
team
running away in first place and all of that. But when you're able to put out, you know, players like Anthony Cirelli and, mm-hmm. and Yanni Gourde on your third line, well,
there's a reason why Tampa Bay
Alex Killorn.
Tampa Bay didn't make any moves today, and nobody would ever say that they needed to make a move.
Steve Yzerman chilled all day.
Yeah, I mean, they were just exactly Yzerman and Julian Breezeball were just kicking their feet up and saying, "We're the best team in the league. We're good right now." It'll be a fascinating morning skate tomorrow for the Jets when they face the Minnesota Wild tomorrow night. It will be fascinating to see how Paul Maurice sort of deploys his new toys and uses them, you know, as getting ready for that big Central Division matchup against the Minnesota Wild tomorrow.
I think Olli Jokinen is pumped up that number 12 is going to be worn by a Jet again.
I think he'll be okay. When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press will join us to talk more about the day that was for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to a special Monday edition of NHL This Week. We're part of trade deadline coverage here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter. We'll get to some of the comments that are coming in on Twitter throughout the show today, so hang tight. I promise we'll get to them. And of course, our website, it's got all of the latest audio from both the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose perspective. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us. Mike, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us on what has undoubtedly been a busy day down at the rink for you.
Yes, I think we expected the Jets to be active, but I'm not sure, guys, that any of us expected them to be this active. A half dozen new players brought in, just a real flurry of activity, which I guess speaks to a couple things, their recent play of late and certainly some of the injury situations. But Kevin Cheveldayoff was certainly burning up the NHL phone lines today, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. We'll start with the main event of those acquisitions. That was Kevin Hayes being acquired from the New York Rangers. That sort of kick-started a lot of the trade deadline action earlier this morning. Your thoughts on the acquisition of Kevin Hayes? You know, there was all the talk about Mark Stone sort of ad nauseum for weeks on end. Now that we can sort of take a step back, can you make the argument that a centerman was actually more important to the Jets than a winger, given the current construct of their roster?
You know, I think it is. And when you hear about some of the attributes of Kevin Hayes and you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff obviously spoke about the offense that they expect him to bring, but he actually spent more time today talking about his defensive awareness, penalty killing, his play in his own end, some of those things that the Jets, let's face it, have struggled with at times. And I think when there was a lot of talk about Mark Stone, you know, he's certainly an incredible defender. And, you know, I'm not saying the Jets got the center version of Mark Stone, because I still think Mark Stone is a better player than Kevin Hayes. But certainly there's some attributes that just go beyond the goals and the assists for Kevin Hayes that I think were very attractive to the Jets. And the fact that he does play up the middle, you know, strong on faceoffs, and whether or not he ends up having chemistry with a Patrick Laine or Nikolaj Ehlers obviously remains to be seen. But I think the center ice position, you know, probably other than your goaltender, is the most important spot on a team. And there's no doubt the Jets have still a need in up the middle. They had a need at last year's trade deadline, and they certainly had a need at this year's trade deadline. So, you know, I think all things being equal, adding a centerman who can bring the sort of things that Kevin Hayes does bring to the table made this a very wise addition. And I think it's why, guys, you saw, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff struck early while most of his counterparts were no doubt kind of playing the wait and see game. He pounced on Kevin Hayes pretty early this morning, obviously not wanting to take his chances of maybe missing out on the player. And, you know, I think that aggressive sort of approach here certainly paid off.
You know, Mike, Drew brought something up really interesting last segment. Everyone is fixated on Kevin Hayes being the Winnipeg Jets' second-line center, but does that really even matter? Because as you just mentioned, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if Kevin Hayes and Patrick Laine have some chemistry and who's going to be the other winger on that line. But is it more important for Paul Maurice to really find that right mix between now and when the playoffs start? And also, what's going to happen to that fourth line? Because Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux were staples of that fourth line for the last month, month and a half. Now Brendan Lemieux is gone, and Mason Appleton has been sent down to the Moose.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the roster right now, guys, and sort of say that Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux have essentially lost their jobs to Nikolai Ehlers and Kevin Hayes, because it was Nikolai Ehlers' return, of course, that knocked Brendan Lemieux out of the lineup, and now it is Kevin Hayes' addition that is clearly going to knock Mason Appleton out of the lineup. So, you know, I think if you just look at that on paper, and don't get me wrong, Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux were doing a terrific job on that fourth line. But in order, you know, to swap those two out for the likes of Kevin Hayes and Nikolai Ehlers, and then what that allows you to maybe do with your other players, your other lines. I mean, I'm just looking at how the Jets might configure things. You conceivably could have Brian Little and Matthew Perreault and Jack Roslovic now be your fourth line if you keep TLC together, and if Hayes goes into that second line center spot. I mean, that would be an incredible fourth line that would really only be a fourth line in name only. And maybe that does allow the Jets to truly be a four line team that, you know, can play almost their four lines equal minutes aside from special teams. And obviously down the stretch and with a busy schedule, that could be a very valuable tool to have in the toolbox.
Mike, through all the trades and, you know, the discussions, you got to feel happy for a guy like Nick Petan, who looks like he may finally get an opportunity to crack an NHL roster.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I guess credit to, I know some fans don't feel like the Jets organization treated Nick Petan very well because they feel like it was personal that they didn't put him in the lineup. It never was personal. And I can speak to this, guys. I mean, I think there's great mutual respect from Nick Petan towards the Jets and vice versa. And I think, you know, Nick Petan's had a very, very tough year, and the Jets have done a lot of things, you know, quietly behind the scenes to help Nick Petan and his family of what they've gone through. But certainly the on-ice stuff has been really difficult because there just really wasn't room for him. And so they made a promise, Kevin Cheveldayoff made a promise to Nick Petan and his agent that he would try and find a new home, a fresh start. And good on Kevin Cheveldayoff for doing that. I mean, I guess he could have held on to the player and Nick Petan could have just continued to sit, and this truly could have been a lost season. But he found a spot, and you know, obviously whether or not Nick Petan gets into the Leafs lineup right away or has to work his way into that remains to be seen. But, you know, I think this is a good solution for everybody. Clearly Nick Petan's time in Winnipeg was coming to an end. And the fact that he appears to have found a pretty good landing spot in an organization that is excited to have him and wants to see what they have in him, certainly bodes well for his future.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on NHL This Week. Mike, of course, covers the Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, you know, obviously Josh Morrissey left the game against Arizona last night with what looked to be a fairly serious injury. We don't know his status, probably won't get an update until tomorrow after the game day skating. We know he won't play tomorrow. The Jets acquire two left side defensemen, Nathan Beaulieu, Bogdan Kiselevich. You know, looking at the Jets roster, their forward group seems to be the envy, or could very well be the envy of most teams in the NHL. Do the Jets have the players on the back end to get the forward group the puck, though?
Well, and that's a question that, you know, I think certainly without Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup, I would say the answer to that is no. But you weren't going to go out today and find a Dustin Byfuglien replacement, just like you weren't going to go out today and find a Josh Morrissey replacement. So what do you do? Well, you maybe try and get a couple depth pieces as they've done and hope that they can hold down the fort along with your in-house solutions that you already had. You know, Sammy Niku, Tucker Poolman, guys like that. And you obviously cross your fingers and you hope that when Dustin Byfuglien returns, hopefully in a couple weeks, that he's good to go and stays in the lineup. And you also hope that whatever Josh Morrissey situation is, that it's certainly not going to go beyond the rest of the regular season and that he'll be ready come playoff time. Because, I mean, I agree that the blue line on this team is certainly an area that I think they need an upgrade. And, you know, today there just wasn't a lot out there, sort of a magic fix. So you plug and hope for the best. But, yeah, I mean, I think if the Jets are going to go all the way this year, they're going to need a healthy Dustin Byfuglien and a healthy Josh Morrissey to be part of that big playoff push.
You know, Mike, just getting away from the trade deadline for a second, I know you weren't in Arizona last night. Your colleague Jason Bell is on the road trip for the Free Press. But, you know, when you heard that Ben Chiarot was only fined and not suspended, that news just came out about an hour and a half ago before we came on air. But he gave Nick Cousins a pretty good cross-check to the neck there last night. Are the Jets pretty lucky that Ben Chiarot wasn't suspended for a game or two?
I think they are, and maybe Adam Lowry dodged a bit of a bullet as well. That game got a little physical, to say the least, and I guess you could say it actually got kind of dirty. So for sure, I mean, losing Ben Chiarot for a game or two, you know, another left side defenseman would been devastating for this team on what is, guys, a pretty tough schedule coming up here. I mean, you look, starting tomorrow night, these Jets are going to play 9 straight games against teams that are currently in playoff spots. The Jets have struggled against teams that aren't in playoff spots. Well, they are really going to get tested here over the next couple of weeks. They're going to play, I was going through the list last night, but the number 1, the number 2, the number 3, the number 4, I think the number 7, the number 8, like, they are going to see the best of the best here over the next couple of weeks. And
second hardest remaining schedule in the NHL, Mike.
For sure. So, you know, the Jets have their work cut out for them, and they aren't guaranteed a playoff spot at this point. I think all signs certainly point to this team making the playoffs, and no doubt they'd like it to be in one of those top 2 spots and home ice advantage, at least for the opening round. But for sure, the road ahead is not an easy one. The Jets are going to need all hands on deck, and certainly with today's moves, they've got some enforcement on the way, which they desperately needed.
Mike, I'm curious your take on the return of Matt Hendricks and just some of the intangibles he brings, and, you know, why the team was so keen to get him back.
Well, I mean, first of all, guys, I don't expect he's going to play very much. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I'll say this. I think if a lot of these players that they acquired today, outside of Kevin Hayes, if a lot of these guys play substantial minutes, then the Jets are probably in some trouble, because that speaks to one of two things: either a whole ton of injury issues or some poor play that requires these players to go in. These are insurance policies that you kind of hope that you don't even really need to cash in. Obviously, Hayes will play a big part. You know, Matt Hendricks, and I know hockey fans, especially with the advance in analytics, the whole sort of intangible element of the game is really tough to measure. Some will say it's overrated. All I can tell you is what I hear from players, what I see with my own eyes. Matt Hendricks was a pillar in that dressing room last year. They absolutely loved the guy. It certainly wasn't what he did on the ice that was what was really important for his time with the Jets. It was what he did off the ice, mentoring young players like Jack Rossovic and Brendan Lemieux, 2 players who he became very, very close with. And I think, you know, reading between the lines a little bit with what Kevin Cheveldayoff said today, is they miss that. They don't have that this year. He talked about sitting down with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele to talk about maybe what they could use. And that's what came up. So while fans may say, well, why are they bringing 37-year-old Matt Hendricks back? What's he going to do to help them win games? I can tell you the things he's going to do are not going to show up on stat sheets. And in fact, I don't expect him to show up in the lineup very much. In a lot of ways, he's almost like an assistant coach at this point, who's in that room in a way that the coaches aren't. And I don't think you can really measure the true value of that, other than to say that this is a team that went 3 rounds deep last year and obviously felt that there is real value to what he can bring, especially for what they had to pay to get him.
Last question for you, Mike. Now that the trade deadline has come and gone, the Winnipeg Jets, we know they acquired Kevin Hayes. The Nashville Predators, they got Wayne Simmonds and Michael Granlund. Of the two, do you think that there's been a changing of the guard at all in the Central Division, or do you think this is still going to be a horse race right down to the wire as for who gets the top spot in the division?
Yeah, I like the moves Nashville made. I especially love that Granlund for Fiala trade. Mm-hmm. But no, I don't think there's any real substantial change. I think it very likely is going to come down to Winnipeg and Nashville, not just for first and second at the end of the regular season, but perhaps a second round playoff meeting is in the cards once again. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to goaltending. I mean, Connor Hellebuck, and he was terrific last year in the playoffs, and Pekka Rinne wasn't in that round. So for sure, you want to go in thinking that you've put yourself in the best position to have success. I think both teams probably feel pretty good about what they did today and where they are. But obviously time will tell who ultimately made the best moves for the team. But for sure, I mean, there's a bit of an arms race, isn't there, going on in the Western Conference. You look at with Vegas adding Mark Stone, and I really like that Gustav Nyquist addition for San Jose. So there are some absolute teams that are in the West that are just loading up, and it's going to make for some pretty exciting hockey down the stretch.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, great work today. Go have yourself a beverage or whatever your drink of choice is, and thanks for joining us.
Mike, before we let you go, which were better, the breakfast sandwiches or the tacos?
That's a good question. That was important.
I am a big breakfast guy, so I'll always be partial to the beverage or to the breakfast sandwich. And yeah, we were joking that in addition to the big trade of the breakfast sandwiches for the tacos, that there was a beverage to be named later. So perhaps that is what you guys are referring to following the working day here.
Absolutely, Mike. Appreciate it. Great work today. Thanks again.
Thanks. Take care.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. When we come back, we look at the Jets' defense going forward with the couple of additions this at today's NHL trade deadline. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Coming up shortly, Rick Carpinello of TheAthletic.com is going to join us. He covers the New York Rangers, so he's going to join us to talk about the Jets' acquisition of Kevin Hayes and what Jets fans can look forward to seeing in a player like Kevin Hayes, who's really probably taking a career leap this year in becoming a more well-rounded, more multifaceted player than the Rangers had seen prior to this season.
Well, and we're also going to ask Rick about Matt Zuccarello, just terrible luck.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he scores a goal and an assist in his debut, and then he gets injured, and he's out for a month.
That's right. The Rangers were certainly terrible. One of the busiest teams at today's NHL trade deadline. So Rick is going to join us in about 8 minutes' time to talk about their moves and specifically Kevin Hayes. We've talked about the forward group for the Jets. Let's look at the back end. If Josh Morrissey is out of the lineup for a significant period of time, and I'm talking into the playoffs, how damaging is that to the Jets' chances? Can this defense, obviously we know what they acquired today, is the Jets' defense, can they sustain it without Josh Morrissey in the lineup for a lengthy period?
Well, it depends what you mean by lengthy period, right? If you're talking about, the first round of the playoffs or second round of the playoffs, it's obviously a problem. If you're talking about, five games or 10 games, it's not a huge problem because the Jets are going to finish first or second in the Central.
Let's say he has the same diagnosis that Nikolaj Ehlers had. Nikolaj Ehlers missed, 20 games for the Jets? So that would put Josh Morrissey out for the remainder of the regular season.
Yeah, but the Jets are still going to make the playoffs and they're still going to be first or second in the Central.
Likely. I mean,
they can withstand.
Okay.
I think Josh Morrissey being out of the lineup, obviously he makes the team better. He's their top defenseman, in my opinion.
Right.
He's certainly a top pairing defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, in that sense, it will hurt their chances of winning the Central, Drew.
Sure.
But when you're talking about going into the playoffs, that's what matters at this point. Same thing for Buff. I mean, if Buff misses the next, whatever it is, 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, that's not a huge deal, guys. Because the Jets are firmly in a playoff spot. They obviously want Buff back in the lineup as soon as possible. But when you're talking about Morrissey, we just don't know. All we know is it's an upper body injury. He's not going to play. It's not good, but we just don't know. So I'm not trying to cop out here, Drew, but I just don't want to speculate because if we're talking about 2 or 3 games here.
Sure, I understand.
Then who cares? I think the bigger question is
who gets the first crack at filling the spot for Josh Morrissey? Is it Beaulieu, just by virtue of him being a more veteran defenseman with NHL experience?
Well, I don't think you want to put in a guy who's never played for the Jets right into the top pairing role.
No, I'm not talking even the top pairing. I'm just talking about who's the...
Oh, you're talking about who goes in...
Who goes into the lineup for the Jets on the left side.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I think there's a good chance that Nathan Beaulieu goes into the lineup. We should also mention he's been a healthy scratch for the majority of the season.
For Buffalo, and Kiselevich hasn't played a lot for Florida either.
Right, so... I mean, Joe Morrow is injured now, too. So, I mean, that I think, is the main reason why, Drew, the Jets acquired two defensemen. It's not just Josh Morrissey. It's because Buff and Joe Morrow are out of the lineup, right? You have three defensemen right now who were staples of your top six. Maybe less so Joe Morrow, but obviously Morrissey and Buff, those are two of your top four defensemen, right? So I think all of that factored in, because maybe Chevy was thinking, okay, I'll add one defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But then he saw a need to acquire two defensemen, and I agree with you. Nathan Beaulieu is ahead of Bogdan Kiselevich on the depth chart for sure, just because he's got more NHL experience, and quite frankly, at this point, he's a better NHL player. So I think there is a chance that Nathan Beaulieu could step right into the lineup, most likely on the third pair. But your bigger question mark is, if Josh Morrissey is out for an extended period of time, which we don't know if he is or not, the question is, who is going to fill those top pairing minutes?
Okay.
I mean, so right now,
Sherrod or Kulikov?
Right. And I mean, for me, Ben Sherrod clearly has been a better defenseman than Dmitry Kulikov. Dmitry Kulikov was burned bad by Clayton Keller last night, and quite frankly, I haven't really liked Kulikov's game. I think Ben Sherrod has been a better defenseman for the Jets, but again, these are short-term fixes. Hopefully Josh Morrissey's not out of the lineup long-term, and this isn't something that you have to consider if you're Paul Maurice, because right now, Ben Sherrod is playing on the second pair, and you obviously like him with Buff when Buff is healthy, but right now, it is an issue because the Jets don't really have, I think, aside from Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, and Dustin Byfuglien, they don't have anybody else that can really step in as a bona fide top pairing defenseman. And that includes Tyler Myers.
It's really interesting with...
Who's obviously a right shot defenseman.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, if Morrissey's out, I mean, do you put Sherratt up with him? And then who rounds out the third pairing? Is that Beaulieu that slides in? I mean, Tucker Pullman was sent down to the Moose today. A lot of talk about whether that's just a paper transaction or not, because today was the AHL deadline to get the roster set for...
You have to be on an AHL roster today in order to be playoff eligible in the AHL.
Right, and the Moose are fighting for their playoff lives, so I think they're just doing this as a precautionary tale.
Yep.
But if Pullman gets recalled, does Sherratt move up and Pullman slots in, I mean, with Sammy Niku, or do they split up Myers... Kulikov to kind of spread the veteran presence on the back end? It's interesting. It's
I do think there is a chance that Sammy Niku could slot in onto that top pair. Not necessarily long term, but when you're talking about skilled players on the left side, Sammy Niku, aside from Josh Morrissey, is your most skilled option on the left side. That's undeniable, but I don't necessarily know that Paul Maurice wants Sammy Niku playing 20, 21, 22 minutes a game against Minnesota, against Nashville.
Well, that's why I think it's likely to be Ben Sherratt, to your point, just because he is the steadiest. He's not
I'm just
the flashiest,
saying I think it's an option.
And he's not the most skilled.
I would say Niku is above Kulikov in the pecking order.
Really? You think that Kulikov has fallen that?
Well, he hasn't played well.
Well, I mean...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Kulikov has had a great season, and especially yesterday against Arizona. Yeah. He wasn't good.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're not wrong about that. It's... The Jets, I mean, without Josh Morrissey, we know that the left side of the Jets defense has been an area of concern all season long. And once they didn't acquire or weren't going to acquire Jake Muzzin, who was really the top target on the left side, once they weren't going to make that deal, you knew that it was going to continue to be a topic of conversation. And then Morrissey goes out and gets injured last night. And it's just another blow, and it really, you know, I guess the silver lining, if you're looking for one, is it gives some players an opportunity to feel more, get more pressure minutes. But, you know, to Mike McIntyre's point in the previous segment, the Jets' schedule from now until the end of the regular season is an absolute beast.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have a 1-3-game series where they go out west, where they maybe face Anaheim, Los Angeles, and Vegas. that is those two games in Anaheim and Los Angeles are sort of the softest part of their schedule. But it is just an absolute dogfight of a schedule from now until the end of the regular season.
Well, then after that, you've got games against the East, against Columbus, Washington, Tampa Bay. March is going to be a tough month.
March is a very tough month. Yeah. I mean, there's no question about it. Now, maybe that gets the Jets, you know, going a little bit, because they have been sort of stuck in this rut where they've been playing these lousy teams, and maybe that is part of the reason they've been playing lousy
hockey.
Sorry,
Drew, those games are before the trip that you were talking about.
Yeah, those games are coming up right after the two-game homestand.
March 3rd, March 5th.
Yeah, where they have to go against Columbus and Washington. Maybe, you know, better competition gets the Jets more motivated, because whatever is the funk, causing the funk that the Jets have been in, they need to get out of it quickly. But I can't help but think that part of their problem is the defense unable to make good first passes to their forwards and get the puck out of the zone cleanly. That seems to be where they're running into trouble, is that there's no, you know, the breakouts just aren't crisp. And
it's the breakouts, but it's also they're giving up too many shots. And, you know, partly due to Dustin Byfuglien being out of the lineup, the Jets have struggled, I believe. I mean, we know Dustin Byfuglien plays big-time minutes. He's the big shot on the power play. I guess maybe, you know, he doesn't shoot as much as he used to on the power play because they've got Patty Laine and Mark Scheifele as other options. But the point is, Buff plays big minutes, and they definitely miss him, and he's missed quite a few hockey games at this point. So that's part of it. Obviously, Nikolaj Ehlers was missed the 20 games he was out, but the Jets as a group have to play better defensively. It's not just on the group of six defensemen, whichever defensemen those are out there. The team as a whole has not played well enough in front of Connor Hellebuck or Laurent Brossoit, giving up too many odd man rushes. So they've got to clean that up, and now's the time to do it. As you mentioned, Drew, with the tough schedule coming up.
When we come back, Rick Carpinello of TheAthletic.com joins us. He covers the New York Rangers. He'll tell us what we need to know about the Jets' new acquisition, Kevin Hayes. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's a special Monday edition on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We're pleased to welcome to the program Rick Carpinello of TheAthletic.com. He covers the New York Rangers. Rick, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. My pleasure. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Rick, how about yourself?
Great. A little tired after today, but we're doing great.
And we appreciate you making time for us. It certainly is a busy and hectic day, the NHL trade deadline. It was very busy, certainly, for the team you cover, the New York Rangers. And the Jets and the Rangers were able to make acquaintances earlier this morning when the Jets acquired Kevin Hayes in exchange for Brendan Lemieux, a 2019 first-round pick, and then a conditional fourth-round pick. So, Rick, having covered Kevin Hayes for the majority of his career,
All of it,
exactly. You know, what is the best attribute that he brings to the table for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, he's a guy who's really developed the last 2 years, and I'm not going to put him higher than a second line center, which is fine. But his all around game has just come so far since 3 years ago. 3 years ago, he had just a terrible season, and he was not in very good condition. And he became, he made himself a very well-conditioned athlete, and he made himself a professional hockey player. But his attributes are, he's become a really good penalty killer and a good power play guy. He's a great passer, although I think he needs to shoot the puck more because he's got a good shot too. If he wanted to be a goal scorer, he could be a goal scorer. But he's the way he controls the puck and the way he sees the game, he slows it down, and he really dictates the tempo of the game and what's going on the ice when he has the puck. So he's a guy who controls it. He uses his body, which is gigantic, to protect the puck. And he doesn't, you know, throw people through walls, but he uses his size effectively to win puck battles. So I think he's just a really good player and a guy who's made himself a much better player, and now he's going to make himself a lot of money at some point. So, you know, he's done a lot, and especially his penalty killing is very impressive. But, you know, last year when the Rangers traded Derek Stepan before last season, Kevin was put into a second-line role in which he was a matchup center where he would go against other teams' top lines. And he learned some defensive responsibility along the way there, too. So, really, he doesn't have a lot of weaknesses except for maybe his speed. His skating is acceptable. It's strong, but he's not fast. And but he manages to keep up with the game with his IQ and his hands. I think they're getting a really good player. Certainly not an elite-level center, but a very good player.
Rick, you just mentioned something that leads really well into my question. You mentioned that Kevin Hayes is going to make a lot of money on his next contract. He's obviously a pending unrestricted free agent. How close were the Rangers, though, to re-signing Kevin Hayes to a contract extension? As you mentioned, Hayes is a player whose entire game has really rounded out nicely. He's not just a good offensive player, which was evidenced by his 25 goals last year, but he's turned into a great two-way player. Was Kevin Hayes ever a player that the Rangers seriously considered signing to an extension, or does he just not factor in based on the fact that the Rangers are clearly going younger?
Yeah, I think, you know, there were a few things at play here, and one of them was I think it was contentious last year, last July, when he was restricted and when he was heading to arbitration. And just before arbitration, they could not get a multi-year deal done. And I think it was a little contentious at that time. So they did a one-year deal, you know, for just over $5.1 million. And I think at that time, he kind of signed his own exit order out of there. Once they decided that he wouldn't go for something reasonable in the five-year vicinity, then that I thought it was pretty obvious that he was going to be out of here at the trade deadline. And, they couldn't then negotiate with him until January 1st. And when January 1st came, they didn't negotiate with him. So they only spoke really just in recent weeks to see if there was any wiggle room there and see if they could come to a contract agreement before they made the decision firm in stone that they were going to trade him. So I don't think he ever was really in their plans. And I think mostly they worry about giving him what he's probably going to get, as an unrestricted. He's probably going to get a sixth year, and it's probably going to be about $6.5 million or maybe more. And they were worried about years 4 and 5 and 6 with a rebuilding team. I don't think they're going to be worried about a guy like Panarin or somebody like that if he's a free agent on July 1st. But they were worried about that with Kevin. In July, when he signed that one-year deal, I thought for sure that he was going to be traded at the deadline.
Rick, you know, just based on your previous answer, you talk about how Kevin Hayes is able to slow the game down, the hands, the amazing vision with regards to passing. You look at this Winnipeg roster, and there's a sniper here that a lot of people say needs a full-time centerman, one that can distribute the puck, one that kind of slows the game down. We listened to his conference call earlier today, and you know, Kevin said, I'm a pass-first kind of guy. I look for that pass. Do you think he, in his own mind, is looking at the opportunity to play with Patrick Laine and almost salivates at this opportunity?
I do. I absolutely do. I think that he lacked that this year. I mean, he played some with Chris Kreider, and Kreider's having, one of his best offensive seasons. But mostly, especially since Kreider's been put with Mika Zibanejad and Matt Zuccarello, who's since gone, Hayes really hasn't had any offensive wingers. He's been playing, with guys who grind and guys like Jimmy Vesey and Vlad Namestnikov and Jesper Foss and guys who grind. So he hasn't had that guy. But even with Kreider, he didn't have an elite scorer like Laine. So it's going to be really interesting to watch him play with that kind of guy. He is a passer. And as I've said, there are times when he has, a dead-on shot, and he gives up the puck. He'll pass it to somebody else looking for that perfect play. There are times on breakaways where he hasn't shot the puck, and he ends up getting in too close and not getting a shot on a breakaway. For some reason, he's not a guy who likes to fire it, and he's got a good shot. So, but I think, you know, line A or that type of player, it's going to be the first for him to play with that type of skill. And I do think he'll salivate over that, and I think he'll do great there.
You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Rick Carpinello of TheAthletic.com. He covers the New York Rangers. We're talking to him about the Jets' new acquisition in Kevin Hayes. And Rick, you mentioned that the Rangers deploy Kevin Hayes in all scenarios, power play, shorthanded time on ice. In fact, he's leading the Rangers among forwards in shorthanded time on ice per game played, almost 2 minutes per game. Is that sort of an underrated or maybe an underappreciated part of his game, his defensive response? Responsibility, especially while shorthanded?
Yeah, I would think so, sure. I mean, he's their best penalty-killing forward by far. He has tons of shorthanded offensive chances. And, you know, he uses that big reach. He reads plays really well, and he's become a very, very good penalty killer. Again, you know, even despite his lack of real good speed, he gets shorthanded breakaways. Just because he sees the play develop and he steps up and steals a pass at the blue line and goes, I think that's a very underrated part of his game. I think he's really good at it.
Rick, when you look at the sum of the parts, the three big trades that the Rangers made, obviously Matt Zuccarello to the Dallas Stars was another big trade because Zuccarello spent his entire NHL career with the Rangers, but obviously Adam McQuaid was the other player that was moved to the Columbus Blue Jackets. When you look at all three of those trades, how would you assess how Jeff Gorton did prior to the NHL trade deadline? And when you look at some of the prospects in the Rangers system, whether it's a guy like Vitaly Kratsov or K'Andre Miller, and then all these draft picks that the Rangers have, they picked up a first-round pick and another second-round pick. Are the Rangers in a pretty good position, you know, going into the summer?
Yeah, I do think they are. And, you know, I've kind of written that lately, that they're looking to accelerate the rebuild a little bit. But, you know, I think the three trades they made this weekend or you know, Saturday and today, in each of them, well, if all three of those guys, everybody in the world knew that they were going to trade. And in each of those trades, Gorton got pretty much what we thought he would get and what he thought he would get. So I don't think he hit any grand slams today, but I think he was 3 for 3. And, with Gorton, what he's done over the last 12 months, and even if you go like to 18 months, when he traded Derek Stepan in the summer of 2017, what he's done since then, or was it 2018? whatever, the year, the
we know.
Summer before last season, the summer before last season, when he traded Derek Stepan, since then, he's turned their prospect list upside down. I mean, he's really improved it. It went from really thin to very, very deep all of a sudden. Now, he still doesn't have a guy who translates into a guaranteed elite first-line type player. I think a lot of people think Kratsov is going to be that. He doesn't have a guy who's guaranteed a first-pair defenseman, although some people think K'Andre Miller will eventually be that. So I think, you know, he's done a lot of really good work, but he still has to hit some home runs in the draft and whatever he does this summer in terms of trades and free agency. And I think they're going to be involved in free agency. They have $18.5 million in cap space right now for next season, and if it goes up to 82, they'll have $20 million. So I think that they're in a really good spot. But they still have to get everything right, or get most of everything right, if they're going to compete in the short term.
Rick, I'm curious as to what you think the role of Brendan Lemieux will be now on the Rangers.
Yeah. I'm going to be really interested to see him. Obviously, I covered his father when he was at the Devils quite a bit. And I was there the night. I don't know if you guys remember. I don't know how old you guys are, but in 1986, when the Canadians won the Cup, they beat the Rangers in the conference final, as it were. I think it was called the semifinal back then. He scored a breakaway goal when James Patrick, the defenseman, was tripped by Ray Scapinello, the linesman, in overtime, and really turned that series around. So I have a lot of history with Claude Lemieux. He was a rookie that year, and he was tremendous. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Brendan. I've only seen him live once, but I think that he's a kid who he's the type of guy that their coach, David Quinn, will absolutely love because he wants guys to be in people's faces. He wants guys who will go through people. And he even said it Sunday after they played a very contentious game with Washington. He wants guys that piss people off. And so I think they got all of that in Brendan Lemieux. And I don't know that much about him skill-wise, but I think he's going to get a lot of opportunity because of those other intangibles.
Rick, just one last question for you here. We've obviously talked about some of the moves the Rangers have made. The Kevin Hayes trade to Winnipeg is obviously the one we've been focused on. But earlier we mentioned the Matt Zuccarello trade, and you've covered the team for so many years. Were you surprised at how Henrik Lundqvist reacted to the media scrum when they asked him about Matt Zuccarello? Or were you not surprised based on the fact that Matt Zuccarello meant so much to this Rangers team?
Yeah, and I know how close they were. I didn't expect them to not be able to answer the question. I didn't expect them to choke up like that. Because I've never seen him do anything like that before. But I did know that he was very disappointed to see him go and that he was kind of heartbroken to see him go because they're extremely close, extremely close. And Henrik's an emotional guy. He's a guy who loved Zuccarello not just because they were close friends, but loved him because they had the same mindset in terms of their competitiveness and in terms of winning being a number one thing. And even in practice, whenever the two of them had a one-on-one in practice, even if it was after practice and they were just doing shootout practice or whatever, if Zuccarello scored, he gave it to Lundqvist, and he'd give it to him good. He would celebrate it like crazy, and it would tick off Lundqvist, and they had a love-hate relationship on the ice like that. But the two of them were inseparable, and again, I expected him to be very disappointed and somewhat emotional. I did not expect him to break down in tears like that.
Rick Carpinello covers the New York Rangers for TheAthletic.com. Rick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We know it's been a long day. We really appreciate your time.
Anytime, guys, and give my best to Kevin if you see him.
We'll do. We'll do that, Rick. Thanks again.
Thank you.
When we come back, we look at some of the other moves made by Central Division teams. We begin our process in going division by division, team by team, breaking out the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to a special Monday edition of NHL This Week, live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.